Chapter 17. His eyes sighed deeply and took the little tin from my hand. I suppose he imagined me in my abandoned way wheedling the necessary cash out of the king for the purchase of that snuff. You can't imagine how simple he is. Nothing was easier than to deceive him, but don't imagine I deceived him from the vainglory of a mere sinner. I lied to the dear man, simply because I couldn't bear the idea of him being deprived of the only gratification his big ascetic gaunt body ever knew on earth. As I mounted my mule, to go away he murmured coldly, "God guard you, Sonora." Sonora. What sternness. We were off a little way already when his heart softened, and he shouted after me in a terrible voice, "The road to heaven is repentance." And then, after a silence, again the great shout, "Repentance." Thundered after me. Was that sternness or simplicity, I wonder? Or a mere unmeaning superstition, a mechanical thing? If there lives anybody completely honest in this world, surely it must be my uncle. And yet who knows? Would you guess what was the next thing I did? Directly I got over the frontier, I wrote from Bayonne asking the old man to send me out my sister here. I said it was for the service of the king. You see, I had thought suddenly of that house of mine in which you once spent the night talking with Mr. Mills and Don Juan Blunt. I thought it would do extremely well for Carlist officers coming this way on leave, or on a mission. In hotels they might have been molested, but I knew that I could get protection for my house. Just a word from the ministry, in Paris to the prefect. But I wanted a woman to manage it for me. And where was I to find a trustworthy woman? How was I to know one when I saw her? I don't know how to talk to women. Of course my Rose would have done for me that or anything else, but what could I have done myself without her? She has looked after me from the first. It was Henry Alliger who got her for me 8 years ago. I don't know whether he meant it for a kindness, but she's the only human being on whom I can lean. She knows. What doesn't she know about me? She has never failed to do the right thing for me unasked. I couldn't part with her. And I couldn't think of anybody else but my sister. After all, it was somebody belonging to me. But it seemed the wildest idea. Yet she came at once. Of course I took care to send her some money. She likes money. As to my uncle, there is nothing that he wouldn't have given up for the service of the king. Rose went to meet her at the railway station. She told me afterwards that there had been no need for me to be anxious about her recognizing Mademoiselle Therese. There was nobody else in the train that could be mistaken for her. I should think not. She had made for herself a dress of some brown stuff like a nun's habit, and had a crooked stick, and carried all her belongings tied up in a handkerchief. She looked like a pilgrim to a saint's shrine. Rose took her to the house. She asked when she saw it, "And does this big place really belong to Arita?" My maid of course said that it was mine. "And how long did Arita live here?" Madam has never seen it, unless perhaps the outside, as far as I know. I believe Mr. Alliger lived here for some time, when he was a young man. The sinner that's dead? Just so, says Rose. You know nothing ever startles Rose. Well, his sins are gone with him, said my sister, and began to make herself at home. Rose was going to stop with her for a week, but on the third day she was back with me with the remark that Therese knew her way about very well already, and preferred to be left to herself. Some little time afterwards I went to see that sister of mine. The first thing she said to me, "I wouldn't have recognized you, Rita," and I said, "What a funny dress you have, Therese, more fit for the portress of a convent than for this house." She said, "And unless you give this house to me, Rita, I will go back to our country. I will have nothing to do with your life, Rita. Your life is no secret for me." I was going from room to room, and Therese was following me. I don't know that my life is a secret to anybody, apostrophe I said to her, but how do you know anything about it? And then she told me that it was through a cousin of ours, that horrid wretch of a boy, you know. He had finished his schooling, and was a clerk in a Spanish commercial house of some kind, in Paris, and apparently had made it his business to write home whatever he could hear about me, or ferret out from those relations of mine with whom I lived as a girl. I got suddenly very furious. I raged up and down the room. We were alone upstairs, and Therese scuttled away from me as far as the door. I heard her say to herself, it's the evil spirit in her that makes her like this. She was absolutely convinced of that. She made the sign of the cross in the air to protect herself. I was quite astounded. And then I really couldn't help myself. I burst into a laugh. I laughed and laughed. I really couldn't stop till Therese ran away. I went downstairs still laughing, and found her in the hall with her face to the wall and her fingers in her ears kneeling in a corner. I had to pull her out by the shoulders from there. I don't think she was frightened. She was only shocked. But I don't suppose her heart is desperately bad, because when I dropped into a chair feeling very tired she came, and knelt in front of me, and put her arms round my waist, and entreated me to cast off from me my evil ways with the help of saints and priests. Quite a little program for a reformed sinner. I got away at last. I left her sunk on her heels before the empty chair looking after me. I pray for you every night and morning, Rita, she said. Oh, yes. I know you are a good sister, I said to her. I was letting myself out when she called after me, and what about this house, Rita? I said to her, oh, you may keep it till the day I reform, and enter a convent. The last I saw of her, she was still on her knees looking after me with her mouth open. I have seen her since several times, but our intercourse is, at any rate on her side, as of a frozen nun with some great lady. But I believe she really knows how to make men comfortable. Upon my word, I think she likes to look after men. They don't seem to be such great sinners as women are. I think you could do worse than take up your quarters at number 10. She will no doubt develop a saintly sort of affection for you too. I don't know that the prospect of becoming a favorite of Dona Rita's peasant sister was very fascinating to me. If I went to live very willingly at number 10, it was because everything connected with Dona Rita had for me a peculiar fascination. She had only passed through the house once as far as I knew, but it was enough. She was one of those beings that leave a trace. I am not unreasonable, I mean for those that knew her. That is, I suppose, because she was so unforgettable. Let us remember the tragedy of Azalidae the Ruthless, the ridiculous financier with a criminal soul, or shall we say heart, and facile tears. No wonder, then, that for me, who may flatter myself without undue vanity with being much finer than that grotesque international intriguer, the mere knowledge that Dona Rita had passed through the very rooms in which I was going to live between the strenuous times of the sea expeditions, was enough to fill my inner being with a great content. Her glance, her darkly brilliant blue glance, had run over the walls of that room which most likely would be mine to slumber in. Behind me, somewhere near the door, Therese, the peasant sister, said in a funnily compassionate tone, and in an amazingly landlady of a boarding house spirit of false persuasiveness. You will be very comfortable here, Senor. It is so peaceful here in the street. Sometimes one may think oneself in a village. It's only 125 francs for the friends of the king. And I shall take such good care of you, that your very heart will be able to rest. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.